Good morning. Please turn in your Bibles to 2 Corinthians chapter 1. Last week I introduced a series which I said I would use Charles Dickens' classic story, A Christmas Carol, as a kind of parable that would lead us through the Advent season. A parable that would both prepare us to celebrate the coming of Christ into the world, but also would remind us how to use Dickens' language, is how to keep Christmas well. And using this story as a parable is in keeping with Dickens' original intention when he wrote it. I remember last week I mentioned how he wrote to a friend and said that so many of his stories he meant to be taken as parables that would lead his readers deeper into the teachings of the New Testament. And so A Christmas Carol does that for us. And last week, remember, we reviewed the first chapter of A Christmas Carol. Dickens calls it Stave 1. And he goes to great lengths to make sure we understand just how terrible of a person Ebenezer Scrooge is. He is a real bah humbug. And he makes him so unlikable to set up the story. And then, remember, Scrooge receives a visit from the ghost of his old partner, Jacob Marley, who shows up to warn Scrooge that Scrooge is sowing seeds of misery in this life that he will reap forever in the life to come if he does not change his ways. And so Marley comes to Scrooge as an act of mercy, as an act of grace, to give him this warning and to tell him there's still time to change. And he tells Scrooge to help him change, to help him figure out his life, he's going to receive a visit from three different ghosts or spirits. A Christmas Carol is more than just a Christmas story. It's actually a ghost story. There are all kinds of ghosts in A Christmas Carol. And the first ghost or spirit that shows up after Marley's ghost is the ghost of Christmas past, whose job it is to take Scrooge back to relive some of the pivotal moments of his life from past Christmases. And one of the first scenes that we see, the ghost of Christmas past shows Scrooge, is Scrooge as a little boy. He's sitting all by himself in a boarding school, neglected and abandoned by his friends. And when Scrooge, the old Scrooge, sees this little boy, sees his younger self all alone on Christmas Eve, while all of his other buddies are off having fun somewhere else, Ebenezer Scrooge weeps. And then, in the next scene, Ebenezer Scrooge is a little older, still a youngish man or a little boy, but he's a little bit older, he's still at boarding school. And once again, he's been left alone. All the other boys have gone home for Christmas, but not Ebenezer Scrooge. But this scene actually has some good news in it, because his little sister Fan shows up to tell him that he does finally get to come home, and not just for Christmas. This is what she says. She says to her brother, "Home, for good and all, home forever and ever. Father is so much kinder than he used to be. That home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night when I was going to bed that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said, 'Yes, you should,' and sent me in a coach to bring you. 'And you're to be a man,' she said, 'and are never to come back here. But first, we're to be together all Christmas long and have the merriest time in the world.'" Now, this scene has a positive turn, but it also gives us insights into Scrooge's childhood. His father was cruel, sent him off to boarding school, and wouldn't let him come back home for Christmas. Ebenezer Scrooge spent most of his Christmases alone as a little boy. His mother appears to be dead. She's not mentioned in the story at all. That's what life was like for Ebenezer Scrooge growing up. Now, the next scene is where Scrooge is now a young man and he's apprenticed to this jolly master named Fezziwig. And the scene is Christmas Eve, and Fezziwig comes in, and he tells Scrooge and another apprentice to stop working, open up the floor, because they're about to throw a huge party and make merry on Christmas Eve. And it's this wonderful, positive, delightful scene from Scrooge's past. He has so much fun celebrating at Fezziwig's party, and there's not a trace in Scrooge of the man he will become. But then, in the next scene, the ghost of Christmas Past takes Scrooge to the fateful Christmas when his fiancée, Belle, breaks their engagement. And she tells him why. She says in the story to Scrooge, "Another idol has displaced me. And if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve." "What idol has displaced you?" Scrooge asks. "A golden one," she says. And then goes on to say, "You fear the world too much. All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, material gain, engrosses you. Have I not?" By now, Ebenezer Scrooge is already well on his way to becoming that greedy, tight-fisted miser who lives only for monetary gain. And his love for money costs him the love of his life, Belle. And undoubtedly, this only further hardens Scrooge's heart and solidifies his turn to the dark side. Now, the Ghost of Christmas Past and that series of scenes that I just walked you through, it serves several purposes, both within the story but also on us as readers or viewers. First, those scenes help answer the question, what makes Scrooge, Scrooge? Why is Scrooge the way he is? What possibly could have turned and twisted this man's heart into the miser he has become? And Dickens describes several factors that would have contributed to Scrooge's negative transformation. His mother was dead. His father was cruel. He was sent away to boarding school, not allowed to come home, had to spend Christmases alone. He was not befriended by other boys. They isolated him. Throw in a fear of poverty and his discovery that making money helped him feel more secure. Top it off by being rejected by his fiance, who could see the kind of man he was becoming, and it's easy to map out the trajectory of his life. Charles Dickens was a great storyteller. He was also a pretty good psychologist. He understood what it is that makes people the way they are. So part of what this does is it answers the question, how did Scrooge become Scrooge? And when we as readers or viewers see that, especially those scenes from his childhood, doesn't it make us feel a bit sorry for him? Maybe a lot sorry for him? Dickens does this amazing thing as a storyteller. He introduces us to this totally unlikable human being, and then he invites us to have compassion for him when we see the answer to the question of why he is the way he is. Scrooge's past, his story, it doesn't excuse his terrible behavior, but it does help explain it, which is worth remembering when we struggle to love or sometimes even tolerate the difficult people in our lives. Every Scrooge has a story. And their story doesn't necessarily excuse their behavior, but it may help explain it, why they are the way they are. Ebenezer Scrooge was not always a bad guy. At one point, he was this lonely, isolated, poor little child. And he didn't just wake up one morning and decide to be mean and greedy. There were external forces and circumstances working on him that got the better of his heart. It was a long process. There are good reasons for the way he is the way he is. Which makes me wonder, one of the reasons God is more compassionate toward our enemies than we are, God is more willing to forgive those who hurt us than we are is because God knows the whole story. I wonder if maybe the reason one of God's defining characteristics is compassion and mercy and grace and forgiveness is because God knows everything about everyone. Other people, especially difficult people, mean people, hard people, Scrooge-like people, they can be a mystery to us, but they're not a mystery to God. He sees it all. He knows it all. And he understands why they are the way they are. It doesn't excuse their negative, destructive, evil behavior, but at least it does explain it. Maybe this is another reason why God is, and God alone, is only qualified to be the ultimate judge on a human life. Because only God sees and knows the whole story. So as we get to know Scrooge's story, especially his past story, it sets us up to be more sympathetic, more gracious, more compassionate, even to this terrible man, Ebenezer Scrooge. Then finally, one of the purposes of The Ghost of Christmas Past is also to remind Scrooge of his own story. Some of it's really bad, and he doesn't want to see it. He doesn't want the reminder of all the pain and the negative experiences. Some of it's really bad, but not all of it is. There are positive scenes in his past story. He had experiences of love. He had tastes of grace. And yet it was those negative experiences that had more of an impact on his life than the positive ones. But when Scrooge remembers the positive experiences, they sow seeds in his heart that will bear fruit later on in the story. See, sometimes when we've made a mess of our lives, when we're in big trouble, when we look in the mirror and we don't like the kind of person we've become, sometimes when we find ourselves in a mess, living in darkness, before we can move forward, we have to look back. Before we can move forward into a new future, we have to look back and account for the past. You can't always change what you're not aware of. And so looking back into the past can make us aware of some of those factors that have twisted us into the kind of people we don't want to be. Sometimes, to move forward into a better future, you have to look back into the past. You know who is really good at this? Ancient Israel. When they found themselves in trouble, when they found themselves living in darkness, when they had been conquered by their enemies, when they're living in exile, they're in a huge mess, miserable experience. They want to move forward, but before they can move forward, they have to look back. They tell and retell their story. A big part of our Old Testament that we read and study in the Scriptures was written so Israel could tell and retell their stories when they were in a mess, when they were in trouble. It was their way of making sense of how did we end up here? And they tell good parts of the story. They love to tell the part of the story where God saves Israel from slavery in Egypt and leads them into the wilderness and takes care of them into the wilderness. And then they cross over into the promised land. And over time, God forms them into a people, a nation, a mighty kingdom led by David and Solomon. They love to tell that part of the story. Those are the good, positive parts. But they also, in telling their story, don't edit out the negative bits. They tell the part of the story how in the wilderness, after God leads them, they cross the Red Sea, walk through the Red Sea, and they get into the wilderness, and they begin to complain. And so, you know, we think life was better in Egypt. They tell the part of the story when they're at the base of Mount Sinai, and they're anxious because Moses has disappeared, and they're not sure what's going to happen next, and they need a God they can see and touch and manipulate. And they use the lesson they learned in Egypt to build a golden calf, and they worship it as an idol. And man, it would be so tempting to not tell that part of the story. It's so embarrassing, so humiliating, but they put it in there. And they're continually honest about the negative pieces of their story, how they continually turned to idols as a people. Whenever they were afraid that one of their neighbors was going to conquer them or attack them, their response, rather than trusting God who had been with them all the time, their response was to worship an idol. They did it over and over and over again. until finally they were conquered and led into exile. And so when Israel tells their story and they're asking the question, how did we end in exile? How did we get in trouble? The answer is, well, in spite of God's goodness, God's love, God's grace, God's mercy, all the ways that God was good to you, you overlooked that and instead managed your fear and anxiety by worshiping an idol. And it was idolatry that landed you in exile. Why did Scrooge become Scrooge? One of the ways of saying it is that in spite of the examples of love from Fan and Fezziwig and Belle, his fiance, in spite of all those positive influences, Scrooge managed his fear of being poor. His fear, his anxiety about not having enough, he managed it by turning to an idol. That's the word Belle uses when she breaks up with him. He has forsaken his first love for the love of money. So what we see the ghost of Christmas past doing for Scrooge is what the scriptures are supposed to do for God's people. We want to move forward, but sometimes we have to first go and look back into the past. Jesus also did this when he came into the world. Jesus didn't come to give his people some new story. He simply called them back to the old story and pointed out all the little bits they had forgotten along the way and kept reminding them of all the bits, the good bits, that would show them how to be a light to the world, which God had called them to be from the very beginning. Jesus didn't come into the world to start a new religion called Christianity. He came into the world to call God's people back to their old story by showing them how to be the kind of people God had always wanted them to be. Even Jesus, he leads us forward by calling us back to the best parts of our story. Because sometimes when you want to move forward, you first have to look back. When Scrooge looks back on his life, we see his heart begin to soften. The past, the positive experiences of the past begin to soften his hard heart. We see Scrooge show compassion for the first time when he's reflecting on his past. He shows compassion for his younger self. He feels sorry for himself. And then that bleeds over into compassion for a solitary Christmas caroler who had disturbed him earlier in the day, and Scrooge had scared him to death. And Scrooge says to the ghost of Christmas past, as he looks upon his own little self all alone, he says, I should have done something for him. And when he remembers that great time with Fezziwig, it brings to mind Bob Cratchit, his poor clerk whom he neglects. And he thinks, there's some things I'd like to say to Bob Cratchit, because the past is working on him. And the ghost of Christmas past shows Scrooge that rather than being an excuse for all the terrible behavior he displays, it can actually be the qualification for making him the best man his friends have ever known. Scrooge allows his past, the pain of his past, to become a prison of self-absorption, of darkness, instead of allowing it to be a platform from which he can love and minister and serve other people who've had similar experiences. Who is the most qualified person to bring comfort to lonely children? Ebenezer Scrooge. Because he grew up a lonely child. Who is the most qualified person to be a great boss to his employees? Ebenezer Scrooge, because he sat at the feet of Fezziwig, the best boss in all the world. Who is the most qualified to be a friend to the brokenhearted, the rejected? Ebenezer Scrooge, because he had his heart broken and was rejected so long ago. This is one of the fundamental principles of the gospel, and it is pervasive. It begins with Christ on the cross, and it emanates out to all of us. This principle is this: God uses our pain, our heartbreaks, our difficult experiences from the past to bless other people. God uses our brokenness, as Christ is broken on the cross, God uses our brokenness to benefit others. And we see it over and over and over. Why am I experiencing this pain? Why am I suffering in this way? Why is God allowing this to happen to me? Well, maybe because God is going to use this to bless someone else. The Apostle Paul writes about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. It says in verse 3, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ." And then follow his logic here and what he says. "The Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God." Paul says, we're able to comfort you because we've been through a lot of trouble and we've been comforted by God. And so when you're in trouble, now I know how to comfort you because God has comforted me. He continues, he says, "For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds in Christ. If we are distressed, it's for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which produces in you patient endurance of the same sufferings we suffer." Paul, as an apostle of Christ, says, "I am qualified to minister to you when you are suffering because I know what it's like to suffer. And I know how to comfort you in your distress because I have been comforted in my distress." The painful experiences that we endure in life, God can use those to minister to and bless others. Our past doesn't have to be a prison of darkness from which we can't escape. It can become, through the gospel, a platform from which we can minister to and serve others. I saw this work out a couple of weeks ago in ladies' Bible class. I had 8 or 9 ladies sitting around a circle, round table, and we were wrestling with that last part of the Sermon on the Mount we covered a couple of weeks ago when Jesus says you've got to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Those people who make your life miserable, you've got to wish them well, hope for the best for them, ask God to bless them. And we're wrestling with this awful teaching from Christ, which seems impossible to follow. How can we do this? And one of the ladies sitting at the table began to tell a bit of her story, and she confessed to us and said that because of something that had happened a couple of years ago that had hurt her and hurt her family, she was still caught up in this cycle where it just felt impossible to love, impossible to forgive, impossible to let go. She was talking about how hard it is and how much it hurts. And that's when another lady sitting across from her began to tell her story. And she had a similar story to tell that had happened years before. Her heart had been broken. Someone had hurt her and her family, and it had felt impossible to move on, impossible to forgive. But she told her story, and she said, "Over time, my heart melted, my spirit changed, and now I can honestly say, I love that person who hurt me. I forgive that person who hurt me. I can move forward in life with that person who hurt me without feeling like I'm filled with hate." Now, I'm supposed to be the teacher of that class. I really just facilitate a roundtable discussion. But as these two ladies began to tell their stories, and as they began to weep, and everyone else began to weep, and I began to weep, I just sat back and let the Spirit move. And what I saw was that the lady on this side of the table had been equipped by her own suffering, and the way God had used that over the years, had been perfectly equipped to minister to this lady on the other side of the table who was just beginning to work through some of the tough stuff. One of the most precious resources we have as a church, it's not this building, it's not the money that shows up in our plate, it's the stories we have to tell each other. It's the stories we share when we circle up and we talk about the way God has seen us through the darkest days of our lives. It's when we look someone else in the eye who they've got tears in their eyes because they're hurting right now, and we're able to say, me too, I've been there, but let me tell you, there is a way through this. That is the most precious resource we have as a community of Christ. Your past can be a prison of darkness, or it can be a platform from which you minister to others. Who is more qualified to minister to those who are dreading Christmas this year because this is the first Christmas since their loved one died or since the divorce was finalized? Who's better qualified to minister to those who are dreading it than those who have endured that kind of pain and loss in Christmases past? Who is more qualified to minister to those who are unemployed at Christmas time than those who know what it feels like to wonder, where is the money going to come from to buy presents for the kids in Christmases past? Who is more qualified to help the rich wrestle with their guilt of having so much while others have so little than the one who has already been pinned to the mat by the Holy Spirit in Christmases past? Our past, the negatives, they can twist us and turn us and lead us into darkness, or we can turn them over to God and God can use them as a platform out of which we are able to minister to other people. So this is my Christmas Carol inspired Advent challenge to you this morning. Remember your story, your past. Spend some time thinking through the key events, those seminal moments in your life, the circumstances, the people that have made you who you are today. And when you remember your story, remember the good parts and the bad parts. And do more than just remember it. Tell it to someone. Find a circle where you can share your story with others. Maybe it's a friend, maybe it's a spouse, maybe it's your kids if they're old enough. But what if you were to tell your story, the good bits and the bad bits, and you were to tell your story and tell the truth to other people as you remember it? This is who I am. This is why I am. This is what has made me into the person I am today, both the good parts of who I am, but also the negative parts of who I am. What if you could tell your story? Remember it. And as you're telling your story, ask God to use it, the good parts and the bad parts, the positives and the negatives, the victories and the defeats, the pleasant surprises and those devastating heartbreaks. Ask God to use all of your story to minister to someone else who's had similar experiences. Don't let your past be a prison. Use it as a platform. Ask God this Advent season to put someone in your path who needs the kind of love, grace, mercy, and kindness that you and perhaps you alone are qualified to give because of your past. And then I also challenge you, put yourself in a position to hear someone else's story. Listen. Because every Scrooge has a story to tell. And if you can get those Scrooges in your life, those difficult people in your life, to tell a bit of their story, maybe they will hear in their own story something that shows them a better future. Or maybe you will hear something in their story that shows you a better future, because that's the way our stories work. Sometimes, to move forward, we got to look back first. So may God use our stories. The stories from the past we find in the Scriptures, the stories of our pasts that we can tell each other. May God use all of our stories at our disposal to show us how to move forward into a better and brighter future.